Okay, thank you. I don't like crowded slides, so this is the most crowded slide I have. What I'm going to talk about is the telephony industry. And what we know about the telephony industry is that it has been a long time a closed sector. And for fixed lines, and now we have the internet, there is voice over IP, things are going better. But this is not yet the case for mobile. And one of the things that is really changing the landscape is voice over IP, the session initiation protocol and things like that. And there are some kinds of extraordinary open source projects going on, like OpenMoco. What they're doing is they want to create open source software to run on your cell phone to get rid of all the closed source things that are in there. And at the network side, people are working on projects like OpenBTC and OpenBSC to create actually the infrastructure that you can use to build a network based on open source software. At this conference, we have one of those networks running, actually. But there is still something missing. Who of you is using a cell phone right now? Okay, so who of you have it completely open source, the network and the hardware? I see nobody. Well, there's one particular reason. There's something that we're missing, and that's national coverage. And there's the ease of use, that you can be anywhere in this country or another country, you can pick up your cell phone and you can call. You can reach anybody, you can be connected anywhere you are. And that's what we were missing. And that's why we started a project, Limesco. And our aim is to be a network operator or a phone operator. Not completely open source yet. That's the long-term goal, but that's not where we are right now. But we want to go there. We're three founders. I'm just one of them. The other two are sitting in the front row. They deserve an applause anyway. I'm only doing the scary part here. But it started about 2 years ago, and we were just chatting on IRC about, there are some things we don't like. There are roaming charges, and sometimes they're ridiculous. And once we started the project, we actually learned there were charges far higher than we even knew. There are providers when you roam in, for example, Australia, you pay 80 euros per megabyte for data. But there was a lot of lack of transparency, or actually there is a lot of lack of transparency. One of the things we noticed in the Netherlands is that you have SIM-only packages and you have package deals, where you get a SIM card and a phone with it. But these are incomparable. For example, when you want to get a package deal, you can choose for a package with 400, 600, 800, or 1,000 minutes. But if you want a SIM only, you can choose for 250, 450, 670. And so what I like to do is I want to compute my total cost of ownership over 2 or maybe 3 years, taking into account my calling, my texting, my data usage, and the device I have. This isn't easy. There are a lot of other things. I'm not going to dive into that in this presentation. But one of the things that keeps getting back is subscription bundles. They rock and they suck. But they're a perfect marketing tool. Because this is what you can say. Well, you can call using our plan from 3.4 cents per minute. Which is actually true. You can do the math. But this is only true if you call for exactly 550 minutes. If you pay half of it, 1 month, you pay actually 7 cents per minute. So, okay. But what if you pay more out of bundle charges? Then we just charge 30 cents per minute. And we can do that because it's written in small letters, in small print, and nobody ever reads it. But there's another trick, and it's unitization. And right now in the Netherlands, this is getting a hot topic. In the telephony industry, it is very used to pay per second and a start fee for a single connection. So for example, and this is something from our price sheet, there's a cost per call of 4 cents, which means you pay the 4 cents no matter what the length of your the duration of your call is, and you pay 10 cents per minute, the cost per minute. Now, if you do this, and you're going to call for 2 minutes and 10 seconds, you can do the math. It's 26 cents. Okay, cool. Now, there is something of a start fee, and we can do marketing again. We don't have a start fee. Cool. What we don't say is we also we let you pay per minute and not per second. So the same conversation now is, again, 2 minutes and 10 seconds, but we do 3 times 10 cents, and it's more. It's just a simple thing, and if you don't compute the details, then you're going to pay more. Now, there's another trick, because, hey, okay, we don't want to round by minute, but okay, we do the first. I'm not going to do the math. It's actually better than round everything. But with data sessions, there's another trick in the sleeves. Let's say we do 20 cents per megabyte when you're roaming within the EU. Okay, it's fair. We unitize by blocks of 100 kilobytes. Okay, that's fair. I've seen worse than megabytes, for example. Per session, which means if you are in a train and the session is dropped for a moment and in a couple of seconds you get a new session, we start again counting towards the 100 kilobytes. For YouTube, which you should not do when you're abroad and you're roaming, this might not be a problem, but when you're doing SSH, you're just doing little data, but if you spread it over sessions, it will get a lot of blocks. Now, my Android phone can measure my usage, but they say your operator may measure data usage differently, for example, per session. Now, when we're talking about what is in the industry in the Netherlands, what companies are involved, there are actually 3 main types of companies we're going to look at. And the first are the MNOs, which are the mobile network operators. And in the Netherlands, we have 3 of them at the moment. The largest is KPN. It is the former state-controlled company. They have about 50% market share in mobile. The second is Vodafone, have about 25% of market share, and they're from Britain. And the German T-Mobile, which has the remainder 25%. And we just had an auction for frequencies. Tele2 is going to join them soon. 2013, so things might change soon. And another thing that might be interesting for people in Germany, E-Plus, actually is KPN. Now, those are the 3 MNOs, and they have a network. They have antennas, and they have an infrastructure to connect antennas to the remainder of the telephony industry. But those are not the only companies you can buy your plan, your subscription from. And that's what we call mobile virtual network operators. And they're virtual because they don't need to have their own infrastructure. And in the Netherlands, we have about around 50. Some of them are actually brands of the larger companies. Some of them are small, are targeted toward a niche. For example, there is an operator specifically targeting people from Suriname. But they are the brands that you see in a store that you can buy. One of them is SpeakUp. It's a little less known. This is the one I'm going to talk about in a moment again. But SpeakUp is the one we're working together with. Limesco officially is not an MVNO, because if we say we are getting in a fight, and we don't like that. So officially, we are a reseller of SpeakUp, and SpeakUp is an MVNO. And SpeakUp is using the network of T-Mobile, the antennas of T-Mobile. But there is a company in between, and this is called an MVNE, the Mobile Virtual Network Enabler. And we have 4 of them in the Netherlands. There were 5, one of them went broke last year. Aspider Solutions would offer services using the KPN network. There's Telena, which have a nice network, all IP-based. They're offering services using Vodafone network. And on the T-Mobile network, we have 2, Elephant Talk and Narrow Minds. um, So when you're a subscriber of Limesco, actually this is the chain of companies involved. T-Mobile is the one that owns and operates the antennas. Elephant Talk has quite a bit of infrastructure in the middle. And SpeakUp and Limesco, we together take care that you as a customer get your bill. So the most important thing the MNO is doing is taking care of antennas. And the most important thing MVNO is doing is subscribers and marketing. And everything in between, you can shift around. So going a little more into technical details, an HLR, the home location register, which in GSM is a component which is actually a database where all customers are listed with the SIM card number, the key, encryption keys to communicate and perform authentication. In our case, this is shared between T-Mobile and Elephant Talk. The VLR is the visitor location register. When you're roaming to another country or to another operator, you're subscribed in the VLR, so the network knows what to do. Well, this is actually not important for us because we don't have our own network. But T-Mobile has a VLR, so when you, as a Limesco subscriber or from another customer, go, for example, into Germany and log on to the T-Mobile network, you're subscribed in the VLR. The SMS center also is managed by Elephant Talk, and the GPS gateway support node, I'm switching the two Gs. Which is actually the gateway to the internet, is also managed by Elephant Talk in our situation. But this can move. So for other MVNOs, it may mean that they're handling SMS center themselves or something. What we have as ambition is that we want to do more ourselves, for example, at GGSN. Because if we have control of the gateway to the internet, we can give more control to the end user. Another thing which you can shift around is number blocks. A lot of brands that are operated by KPN have one huge number block which is by KPN and it's just shared among them. While at the other side, in our case, we make use of a number block which is registered to SpeakUp. And call routing. This is one that's very interesting in our case. You can leave things higher up in the network. You can make let T-Mobile do the interconnection, and you can give you can make routing decisions and say to T-Mobile, just route it to there. But in our case, what we're doing is just route every call to us, and then we can make the decisions in the end. Which I'm going to do in tell a little more about in a shameless plug at the end of the presentation. But one of the interesting things we've been investigating in the last 2 years is pricing. And pricing is different for MNOs, MVNEs, and MVNOs. So let's start with MNOs. What is the situation for an MNO? You have a couple of costs. So first of all, you have a lot of antennas and you have infrastructure. And these two tend to be expensive because they're closed source and there are a lot of support contracts and everything involved. But this is equity. You own them as a network operator, or you lease them. And when you lease them, you don't need to have a large upfront payment to buy all the antennas to create national coverage. But they are owned by a network supplier or by the manufacturer, and you lease them and pay by month. Which is cool as an operator, because now you know you have a certain amount of costs every month and you must make sure that you have income to cover those costs. Now, if you choose as an operator to own them, to own the hardware, you have a lot of upfront costs and you use amortization to in accounting to spread the cost over a longer period. This is something which happens in accounting for every company. The cost involved for network operators is just a little higher than for a small company. Now, you have now in your books a certain amount of money you have to pay every month, so you want to get income. Now, the easiest thing you can do is just charge your MVNE per month. And that's nice because you can say, whatever happens, you need to pay me 1 million euros every month anyway. If people are calling it or not, I don't care, you need to pay. That's happening. Now, next is there are some administrative tasks. And depending on how things are arranged, there are more or less of them. But porting a number, transferring it from one provider to another provider involves some task, calling people a bad, or when you have bad debts, calling people to get those to get your money. It's all administrative actions which you want to do. And there is a charge for usage. By the way, you can make up any way, as an MNO, you can make up any way of charging your MVNE. The thing is, it must be reasonable, because if it's not, they will not accept it. But you're free to do. What you're actually doing is spreading the cost of your hardware over a large customer base. Now, if you're going to do that, you can set up a cost per call and a cost per minute. We have already seen those. But the interesting thing is, what you're selling is airtime, access to the frequencies. So you can do it in both directions, both for outgoing and incoming calls. And we call them, by the way, mobile originated, when your mobile starts it. And we are used to pay as a customer when we start a call. But also network initiated, so going from the network to the mobile. The MNO just charges an MVNE when that happens. You're just using minutes or seconds, how you see it. So looking at an MVNE, they have a different structure. They have monthly costs, we have seen them. And they have usage-related costs, we have seen them. And besides that, we have some administrative costs. And we can have some infrastructure. And we can, as an MVNE, choose how much we want. So getting income now again is the same like an MNO. But this time your customer is the MVNO, the mobile virtual network operator, which is finally going to charge the customers at the end. So let's look at that one. Now it's getting a little more interesting. Subscriptions are like a bus. You see, there is you need to pay per month. And when you sell subscriptions, you're getting your income per month. And that's cool, because it's steady. You can just calculate, you can compute, and say, well, this is the number of customers that we have, this is the subscriptions they've purchased, so we can just say, this is what we are getting every month, without doing too much. You must keep your customer satisfied, of course. And besides that, you have usage. And you can come up with interesting schemes. But the most tricky thing you have as an MVNO is in Europe, people are used to pay only for outgoing calls and outgoing SMS messages. In America, when you have a subscription to a mobile phone, you pay for incoming calls. But this is not the way it is in Europe. So you must somehow cover this. So let's take a look at it. You have some components. And as an example, I'm going to take the outgoing call and the incoming call. And for the outgoing call, you have two legs. First is the airtime, which means that from a device, a mobile device, to the network, to your network as MVNO, there is some voice stream. And then you forward it to an interconnect to another provider. Now, you can put costs on this. Leg A, these are not the real numbers, but leg A, let's say, is 5 cents per minute, and leg B is 2.7 cents per minute. The leg B one actually is the cost. It is regulated by the government. So this is easy. You know exactly what your costs are. Now an incoming call. It's the other way around. The leg A is now coming from an interconnect from another provider. And leg B is your airtime, so going into the air. Okay, this is interesting. We have a negative, which is income. The other provider is paying you to handle the connection. But it is less than what you have to pay the MVNE, and finally the MNO, to get access to the frequencies. So you're making a loss on incoming calls. Now, how to fix this? Let's assume 50% is incoming calls and 50% is outgoing calls. Then we can roughly say the interconnect balances out to zero. So we can leave it out. And for the outgoing connections, we say our cost is 2 times 5 cents, so it's 10 cents. And we can cover the outgoing call that we're handling right now. And we are building a buffer so we can pay for the incoming calls. Again, subscriptions like a boss. This is on a single connection. If you're going to charge on a single call, But if you're just saying, well, we have a pretty good idea what our customers are doing, how much they're calling, whom they're calling. So we can make some computations and just say, well, you pay this amount, $50 per month. We know people with this subscription roughly have this usage pattern, so we'll take care all things are involved. So this is an interesting thing. At one side, we have the MNO. They have monthly costs, and they're splitting it up in all kinds of subcomponents because that's the way they want to distribute the charges, the costs over the customers. And at the other side, we have those subcomponents, and we build them up again because it's much nicer to just say, okay, this is your monthly fee. But also, we have regulations. And there are two kinds of regulations that are most important. One is the interconnection fee. When two providers are going to handle a connection between each other, one of them can charge the other a fee. And in the early days of mobile telephony, this was unregulated. So the bigger incumbent providers like KPN, they could just say, you know what? Just pay me 9 cents per minute. And then the smaller ones that were just starting in the market, they just had to pay 9 cents per minute, or they could just say to the customers, you cannot call to KPN, which is, of course, not an option. So there was not much to do about it. And then in the Netherlands, we have the OPTA, which is an independent government agency, which has regulated this, and the prices getting down and down, and they say for every provider you can charge 2.7 cents per minute, and that's it. And another thing which is regulated are the roaming fees in the European Union. And the roaming fees actually are implemented by end-user price caps, and this has two main consequences. For outgoing calls, for example, this is 29 cents, and for incoming calls, it is 8 cents. Excluding VAT. However, your MVNO may have higher cost than this, especially for incoming calls. What your MVNE can say is, you know what? I don't care about this 8 cents. I'm not regulated. You're going to pay me 11 cents. And then an MVNO has no choice. They must, or they have a choice. There are two options. Option one is take a loss on calls, and option two is just don't allow roaming. And there are some niche markets where MVNOs choose this last option, but it's not always a good thing to do. The reason why the EU did this is they want to reduce roaming and user prices and to stimulate cross-border businesses. One thing you see saw in Europe a couple of years ago is that when you cross a border, your charges are going way up, your prices are going way up, and people were hesitant. They just didn't use those services because it was too pricey. While at the other side, in the US, people already were used to just paying like 16 cents per minute for nationwide calls in whatever state you were at the moment. For a big operator, this is not a problem. And in particular, operators that have their own network, that are MNOs, this is not a problem. Because when you're T-Mobile and you're in Germany, you can just say, you know what? I'm going to charge you more as a visiting operator. And they're getting the income to cover the higher fees they have in other countries and for their roaming customers. But for a small operator, this is not an option. So while the EU had the goal to reduce prices, one side effect is that for a small operator, there are some problems that are not, or non-existent, I would not say, but they're more easily solved by bigger operators. And I'm going over to my shameless plug, which is Limesco. We're working on this project. We have, in the Netherlands, started in October with actually handing out SIM cards to people who want to be a customer. And when you put it in your phone, you have SMS just the way you're used to it. You can use data the way you're used to it. with a bundle. We don't like it, but at this moment we could not get out of that because higher up, in our case, Elephant Talk, they just said, okay, we just want to know what is the amount of megabytes you're going to purchase for this individual SIM card, so we don't have any choice at this moment. But for voice, we have some interesting thing that no other operator has for you as consumers. Well, you have a choice. You can choose for out of the box, and out of the box is what it says. It works in the same way as with a classical operator. You put your SIM card in your mobile phone and it works, and we'll take care of everything. And we have do it yourself, which is more fun. What is being taken care of is the communication between phone and T-Mobile, and is just using GMTS and UMTS protocols and voice streams. Then somehow this gets through Elephant Talk to SpeakUp using the legacy telephony protocols. But finally, to the end user, we're using SIP. So you install your own asterisk or free switch box, and you register your mobile phone just as if it is another extension, and you can do almost everything you can do with those applications. There are a couple of exceptions. For example, calling 112 is not possible, or it's not, will not be routed to your own server. It will be handled by the T-Mobile network. But those things are good, and I think everybody can appreciate it. So if you like that, if you want more information, you should go to limesco.nl. The site at this moment is a little ugly. It's our first start, but we're working on something better. And for now, we're only in the Netherlands. I'm sorry, but we hope to expand to other countries. And actually, the best thing to do that would be if in, let's say, Germany, someone steps up and starts doing this. And you can learn from what we did the last 2 years. It would be really cool if we could break some things that are unbreakable at the moment. So this was my presentation.
So now it's time for questions. If you have a question, please raise your hand. Just one person in the whole room? Okay, you.
Thanks. Hi, Mark. I've just been doing some work in Mexico with something similar, where we're trying to do it on a community basis where they run everything themselves. And we've been seeing that the most difficult thing is to try to install enough capacity for people to be able to use a network. So we don't, or the communities don't really want to charge. Sorry, I'm going to get to the question. What we've seen is that the most expensive thing to do is to bill. Yeah?
Yeah.
Because you need all this billing infrastructure, you need to log calls, you need to do all of these things. If you don't do any of that billing stuff, then you don't have those costs. So basically, you just have your installation costs once that's covered. Essentially, the service is free. Everything that you just talked about there was really interesting, but mainly seemed to be about how the commercial part of the existing infrastructure works in a European context. I'd be very interested to know what are you? I mean, you're buying services from SpeakUp, so how do you handle that part of billing your customers, and is that a headache, or how does that part of it work? Do you know? Would you be able to talk about that?
Yes. Mainly, what we do, we receive the call detail records from SpeakUp, which in the future we are going to make available to the end user with an API. But we're receiving the call detail records, which state which user called at what time, to what destination, what the charges are. We have been we have written a program that actually takes this information and creates the invoice out of it. So it computes the cost for each record that we receive. which is not completely finished yet, but for most basic operations it works. So what we do then is receive all the information. We know our pricing plan, so we can compute the cost we have, the price we charge to our customer, so we can verify everything is correct and then make up the invoice. So in our case, most of the work is not done by us. We get the details. We only need to match every CDR to a line in our price rule, and the price rule set. But there is a thing, the price rule set is a complex thing, which we indeed found out, and it took some headache the last months. We're starting to manage it. We're still working on it to get better at recognizing what the destination is and all kinds of stuff.
Okay, the next question is on the right, please.
You said earlier that the easiest way to enable a network like you have already set up in the Netherlands is if somebody steps up and just does that. Is there anything like an, I don't know, IRC channel or whatever, where you guys meet and talk about this stuff? Because I think the operators will differ by countries. So that people share information about that probably enable contracts between nations and stuff like that.
Yes. Well, actually, there are two questions in one. One is companies differ, which is true, and we were very lucky in the Netherlands that SpeakUp is there. The nice thing we managed with SpeakUp to get started without much upfront investment. Most other companies just say, well, let's just start with either paying 100,000 euros or showing that you have a marketing budget or showing that you have a lot of customers or you have a brand that you are going to use. We had neither of all. So it might be more difficult in another country. I don't know yet. At the other side, yes, we have an IRC channel. We have a mailing list. You can join. You can ask questions. We have a wiki, our website, and the software we're creating is on GitHub. So please reuse it if you're going to set up something in another country. We can learn from each other.
Okay, and we have a question over there, please.
This is a question mainly to the audience, to everyone. Now, here's to hoping that somebody in here might want to copy what they did. To give them an idea of what kind of economic possibilities are there. So what kind of premium would you be ready to pay for such a service, for such a community, or more freer service for your cell phone? Would you be ready to pay a premium of 10%? Who? Give us a hand, 10%? Oh, come on, this would be a real good service. 10%, 25%? 25%? Losers. I'm sorry, I didn't say anything. 50? Okay. So maybe somebody will start such a thing. I would love it. I'm not going to do it myself, though.
Okay, now please raise your hand very clearly. I can't really see if you just go like this and scratch your head. Okay, 1, 2. You have a question?
No. I have a question. I would like to know more about the legal consequences of being a telco provider. Wiretapping surveillance. My question is, I would like to hear something from you. I mean, it will affect you, I think, that the Dutch government will approach you and say, come on, let's give me all the data you have on client X. And maybe it is not this because it affects another layer of the chain of providers. So could you be point out that, please?
Yes. Yes, there is a law which says there must be wiretapping in place. And there also is a law which says, I would rather call it, you must sell your customer data to the government. And I call it that way because you actually get money for it. Wiretapping is done by SpeakUp. and for everything else is covered by a non-disclosure agreement, so I cannot tell about it, but yes, it's there. The other part, your customer data must be delivered to the government, and there are protocols in place. There's an organization for it, and it's a secret. It's covered in secrets, which is one of the things we're actually fighting. Every operator does it, so if you have a cell phone or an internet connection, the government gets to know it anyway. So we must do it too. What is interesting to tell is there are a couple of steps to get in there, and this is all public information. The first step is you sign a non-disclosure agreement that you're not going to tell anything else. You sign it, you send it to the organization. It's in the Netherlands is called a SIOD. And then they're going to send you something called Package B, which describes everything, how it works in a technical way. Which is interesting, because we said we do want to follow the law, which is of course required, but the law does not say we need to sign a non-disclosure agreement. So what we said is, okay, please, we want to go on, we want to move on, but we're not going to sign this. So unless they're going to force us anyway, which is of course a real option, until now it's not done yet. Which means we're not connected to that to the organization also. But we're saying like, okay, so it is already public information that the information is encoded in XML and transmitted over FTP, and there is some kind of encryption in place. This is public information. What the exact XML format is, we don't know yet. We also don't know why that must be kept secret. We, of course, understand that we must keep IP addresses and usernames and credentials and encryption keys secret. There's nothing wrong with that. But we say, why not make it open source? So why not make it open? We want to create an open source implementation. Everything we have right now is open source, so we just want to do it that way too. So there are still work in progress at that point.
Okay, we've got the next question in the center, please.
Can you give us some examples on what we can actually do when you're routing calls through your system to my SIP server? What can I do with it? Do you have maybe three or four examples of cool applications you can think of?
Yes, the easiest one is conference calling, which of course is available by existing operators, but they know it is very difficult, so we can charge more. Another thing is you can, if you find that routing to America is cheaper using VoIPBuster, you can do that yourself. But that's only cost related. Other things is you can use shortcodes. If you have an existing voice over IP infrastructure in a small company, then you can now just plug in your mobile phones as part of it and have, for example, four number digits, which are just part of it. One nice example is when you have, for example, besides Limesco, I'm working as a software engineer, and in our company we have people that have share a role of project manager and pre-sales accountant. And they, for pre-sales, what you want if a customer has a question and they call back, you want just someone. And if this person you're calling is not available, it should be routed to someone else, so your question can be answered and your prospect is not lost. Well, at the other side, when a customer is calling you for in your project manager role, routing it to someone in the pre-sales group, it doesn't make sense. They cannot answer the question. So the best thing you can do is record a voicemail and get back later. So all the things are already possible in a normal voice over IP situation with asterisk, but people are using mobile phones more and more, and there is a gap in there. So that's another example. So actually, anything you can do with voice over IP, you can do with it.
So we have a couple of questions from the internet. The first question is, do you accept Bitcoin as a payment method?
uh, Not yet. And actually, we want to do it in two steps. In the first step, we are just going to charge everything in euros, and on the invoice you say, okay, this is our exchange rate, you can pay in Bitcoin. But in time, we want to go a step further, and we say, okay, this is the price per minute in Bitcoin, which is a little more difficult because you have exchange rates which fluctuate, but it's a thing we're going to get on in the future.
And the second question, it's basically based on the fact that the stream has been down for most of the time. They were wondering about the latencies. I think there was some misunderstanding that you were using VoIP throughout the process. But as I understood it, you were actually using GSM from the handset to your equipment and then handing it off to, as SIP. So could you just go over real quick the technical connection and what the latencies are?
Okay. What I don't know by head is the exact latencies with numbers, but I can do this part. So between your phone and the network, it's actually the way it is happening with any cell phone, so there doesn't change anything, nothing is changed. This part also is the way it actually works, so nothing is changed. And then finally there's a translation to SIP, and from there on we route it over the public internet to your own SIP server. The endpoints are hosted in highly connected data centers, which of course everybody says, but it's in two data centers at the moment. And so if you have in AMSX a SIP server, then the latency is really low. If you put it on a DSL line or a cable line, it might be a little more. It will be a little more. But it's mostly in your own hands.
Okay, do we have any questions on the right? Anyone? Yeah, you please.
How about USSD? Do you have any possibilities to receive or in any way interact with USSD?
Interact with?
With a user over USSD. So, for example, the user keys in *120# hash to access an application that is within your realm.
I think I don't really understand your question.
Are you able to use USSD codes?
To use what codes?
USSD codes.
USSD?
Unstructured supplementary signaling data.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Question answer.
Well, to be honest, I heard the term, I didn't recognize it, the abbreviation. I must be honest, I don't know yet.
Because that would be really interesting, as it's just signaling data, and depending on the operator, not that expensive or not built, because most operators use it for checking your balance and stuff like that, and
yeah.
It also works in roaming and would give a user that has control over that considerably interesting ability to transfer information.
Yeah, correct. I don't know yet. We haven't looked into it. You should just send us a mail or get an IRC. And great idea.
Okay, now please raise your hand again, because I can't really see you if you just do it for 1 second. One there. So that, and you. Okay, we're going to start over there. You, please.
Yeah, hello. I have a more general question about how we as hackers, as a culture, should approach problems. I mean, you took an approach where you found your own company, you went into the market, and another approach would be to try to regulate other ISPs or to do what you did.
Right? Yeah.
Do you think we as a culture should more often try to get into the markets ourselves instead of trying to regulate over the government with lobbying and stuff?
Yeah, yes, I think so. While the other side is also important. But one of the powers is if people actually believe in this idea and join us, then we're getting a user base. And a user base has two things. First of all, there you say we have this amount of people that believe this, so we can say. But the other thing is what we charge is not actually what we're what our prices are, what we have to pay. So there is a small margin in there. So we are getting money, and this money we can use to do what we believe in. So what you're actually doing if you're starting an initiative and going to the market is you're saying, okay, I believe the free market, and I'm going to make an offer. And if there is a demand for it, then people will come, if you're doing your marketing right, of course. And if there's nobody interested, then it will die, and you know your idea. You're just a soul one with the idea.
Okay, one question from the internet.
What's the typical cost for bandwidth for a user?
The cost for bandwidth, you should check out our website. But mainly we have a couple of components. One is a monthly fee for a SIM card, and optionally for data, for a data bundle. The second is we want to be fair. So what we say is Limesco has a couple of fixed costs, for example, servers, domain name, accountancy, some other things. What we do is we get this total amount and we divide it by the number of active SIM cards, and we set an upper limit because otherwise with one user that would be too much. So it's going to decline over time. And next to that we have fees for usage, and for calling this is 10 cents per minute with a 4 cent starting fee. And for in the do-it-yourself, in the out-of-the-box case, and for do-it-yourself, it's a little cheaper. It is 7.1 cents per minute in both directions, so also for incoming, which is a thing you should keep in mind. And, of course, you then have some fee to an operator to do an interconnect.
Okay, we had one question over there on the right.
Yeah, I have two things. If you're looking for this kind of network in Denmark and Sweden, you can contact televox.se or ipvision.dk.
Okay.
And the last thing is, if you have more than one network, have you been looking into SIM cards that can switch from one network to the other network provider, so you don't have any roaming?
That's something that would be really cool, but we're not doing at the moment. For the simple reason that we're small, we don't have capital, so we've now chosen to just say, okay, there are a lot of things we cannot do, but let's make a first step and let's get rolling and then go on. But this is actually one of the things that that started the whole idea. One of the examples Shores, one of the co-founders, had is with mobile data. In the Netherlands, he could make, I don't know, a gigabyte of data, and he pays 10 euros or something. And when he steps a couple of meters into Germany, it would be a couple of thousand euros, which is strange. So one of the things we don't like is roaming charges, and we would really be cool. It would be really cool if we would be able to. Make a hole in there, but that's not where we are at this moment.
Okay, and the next question from the left, please.
You.
Yes, you.
I have another question about roaming charges. When you're a T-Mobile customer in the Netherlands and you go to Germany, where there's also T-Mobile, why do I still have to pay for roaming?
T-Mobile in the Netherlands is not T-Mobile in Germany. That's question, answer one. And answer two, there is no technical reason. It's just commercial.
So one company pays to another company, which is not really, but actually the same company.
Yeah.
Okay.
But more importantly, this is an interesting insight we had. And when people are choosing a subscription, they're going to look at everything that's advertised and what cool mobile phone they get, but they're forgetting that once in a year or twice per year they're going to a holiday and going to the to another country. And then when that happens, when they go to another country, they're, oh, you know what? We should now solve this. But at the time they make the decision for a subscription, they're not looking at everything that's involved. So there are roaming fees, and if you actually shop around, you can get things for a much fairer price. But you need to do it yourself.
Okay, any more questions? One there, yeah. One there, yeah. And you. Okay, we're going to start here. No, you don't have him. Go to Mike. Oh yeah, please go to him. Thank you.
You were talking about do-it-yourself versus bundled. Can you say a bit more about the difference of what it is actually?
Between do-it-yourself and out-of-the-box?
Yes.
Okay. out of the box is actually what any operator is offering you today. Okay, so that's the way out of the box. And do it yourself is we route a voice stream to your SIP server and you have to do everything else yourself. Okay.
Okay, and now you, please.
Is there any recoding done between the SIP server and the headphone? Because with open source baseband, you could do encrypted calls from your handset to your SIP server if there's no recoding done.
So I don't know yet. It's an interesting question which has been posed before. One way to find out is just try it.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, we had one question there.
My question is about the voice codec. So, because in UMTS, in fact, there is a possibility to use what we call wideband telephony with AMR wideband. And as far as I know, only one operator in Europe is doing it. It's Orange. Mm-hmm. So you can have high quality telephony between calls from this operator. But with your system, is it possible to forward to the SIP server this something else than GSM codec, but using this AMR wideband, for example, which is part of the standard?
Yeah, which is a related question. And again, I don't know yet. So we have chosen to just start now because there were a lot of things that we don't know yet. But when we start, we can do experimenting. And this is one of the things we can probably just try out.
OK, any more questions? You and you. OK. Him, please.
How much time did you invest for that over the last 2 years? Did you work full-time on it or, I don't know, 10 hours a week on average?
On average, last time I checked, it was around 11, 12 hours per week for me, which is excluding what Sjors and Gerrian and some other people were doing. Maybe one full-time equivalent at this moment. But we are noticing it is not enough.
Okay, and now I got you. And anyone else had a question? Okay, over there, please.
It would be interesting to know how do you do the initial marketing of your service? And how do you get your initial batch of customers? Yes. Besides talking in front of full lecture halls.
Yes, the first batch of customers we already have, we got them mainly by being at conferences. So we did some talks in conferences in the Netherlands. We've been featured on a couple of websites, which drove some traffic, which is cool. But right now we have decided to wait with more publicity and first create a proper website to not scare away people that are getting there. But this is still something we need to step up on in 2013.
Okay, now please, if you're trying to leave, do so quietly, and if you don't really have to, just stay for another 7 minutes until the talk ends, because it's really, really hard to concentrate for everyone if you just keep walking around. And also you for the next talk, please wait for a few minutes. So the next question was over there, I think. So please go there. It's him there.
Hello. I think you said the heavy lifting part of network coverage is pretty much bought from larger companies, from the MNO and MNV, if I remember correctly. The actual installation and maintenance of the antennas and the network and the home register, is it technically possible, ignoring capital issues, to gradually start replacing parts, small parts of that equipment, of the antennas, with your own equipment?
It's not an ambition we have right now. We have thought about it, but it would need a lot of money to do so. One of the things we've also been thinking about is maybe we can encourage people to own their own antenna and connect it to a network. But there are a lot of technical problems, not really technical problems, but political problems to get it interconnected with the existing infrastructure. But it's something that's worth trying out. If I know there are people in our community that are interested in it. At the moment, it's not an active project we're working on. So, not yet. Maybe never, I don't know. But it's a cool idea anyway.
Okay, we have about four and a half more minutes, so we're going to make this really quick. You over there, please.
I'd heard that at one point in Holland that you were able to operate unlicensed in the DCS in parts of the DCS 1800 band at low power. Is that still the case, or do you know, or is that just a rumor? Or
it is still possible to do. There is a small unlicensed band that you can use, which is capable of, which allows you to run your own base station. It is too small to do real UMTS and therefore data. You can use voice and SMS over it. Having said that, when you're in your own environment, you should use Wi-Fi for data. And So it still is the case.
Okay, and now you, please. Yeah, give him the mic, please.
About the forwarding to the SIP server, do you route both calls to the SIP server, the incoming and the outgoing calls?
Yes.
So it's incoming calls gets routed to the SIP server and to the mobile phone?
Now, what happens, our network does a registration on your SIP server, which takes care of communication with your mobile phone. And also, your SIP server makes a registration at our network, which takes care of the incoming call to your public 06 number. 06 is in the Netherlands the prefix for mobile phones. So if someone calls that number, it is routed to your SIP server over the trunk. And then you can decide to forward it to your mobile phone or maybe do something else, voicemail or an IVR or whatever.
So. I guess what you haven't talked yet, but what usually a business customer always wants is also the presence information. If a user is currently having a phone call on his mobile, if the mobile is turned on or turned off, and that's what I'm doing lots in the voice over IP business, and lots of enterprises always ask me, they want to have the full control over their phone calls. So actually, probably you should not talk in front of nerds here, but you should talk about in front of whole enterprises, big enterprises, because that's what they're looking for.
Yes, correct. We have made this decision right now because we think, first of all, something must change, and we want to be in open source, and there's an ideological thing behind it, and I'm not really interested in getting rich in yet another closed source thing, doing something more cool. At the other side, what we have said is if we start with working with nerds, or we call hackers, those are people with ideas and they can create new building blocks, etc. And using those building blocks, we can potentially create even more valuable packages for companies. And then we can step up and we have more. So what we're doing now is making sure the basic building blocks are really really there and really great. And then when more building blocks are created by us and by other people, we can just combine them into a single package. And with we, I don't mean especially Limesco, but maybe together with someone who made those blocks.
Okay, we have run out of time. Now, so if you have any questions, you can reach Mark on Twitter, or his contact information should be in the Fahrplan. Otherwise, please give him a warm round of applause, and thank you.
Thank you.